Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome back to Small Caps. My name is Kerry Stevenson. I'm bringing you a really interesting story today. And it's interesting, not just because it's in Canada, but it's interesting because it's coal and renewable. And I'm finding what they're doing really interesting. It's Montem Resources. The ASX code, ladies and gentlemen, is MR1. Joining me today to discuss the project and all of the news that's coming out at the moment is Peter Doyle. He's their managing director and CEO over in Alberta, Canada. Peter, welcome to the Small Caps program. Good to see you.
Thanks very much, Kerry. Pleasure to be here.
First up, let's just remind our listeners who are Montem Resources. Give us the brief overview.
Sure. So Montem Resources is an Australian listed company. As you said, the ticker code is MR1. We listed just over a year ago. We've been in operation since 2016. We're a hard coking coal or steel making coal development company based here in Alberta. This is where I am. And we have a suite of assets down in a place called the Crow's Nest Pass. The two premier assets we have is known as the Tent Mountain Mine, which is an existing mine that's in an idle state. It last mined in 1983. And a much larger project called the Chinook Project, which is a development project, which is in its earlier stages, although we defined it about a year ago, and it's a really exciting large hard coking coal project. Recently, as you well know, we announced to the market that we are looking at the potential to transition the Tent Mountain mine from a hard coking coal mine to a renewable energy complex. And that complex is the centerpiece of the complex is a 320 megawatt pump hydro energy storage facility, similar to a Snowy storage facility, just at a smaller scale. And additionally to that, we're seeking around about 100 megawatt wind farm that'll be off-site. I'll talk to you about that. And most excitingly, a 100 megawatt electrolyzer that would be powered by 100% renewable energy, thus producing 100% green hydrogen. And that has the potential to be the largest and first green hydrogen facility of that magnitude in North America, we think, but certainly in Western Canada. So we're repurposing existing assets of the Tent Mountain Mine. We own the land where the water bodies are. These water bodies are 300 metres in elevation from where the upper water reservoir is to the lower reservoir, and that is the unicorn that allows us on private land to produce a very large power project that would have the capacity to have over 2,500 megawatt hours of energy and storage. And what that actually means is that we could use wind power to pump water up a hill. We can either wait for the need for additional power or for the price to be high, and then we would produce a large amount of power for up to 8 hours at a time and supply that to the grid. We first looked at that project in 2019 and it was quite compelling. However, at the time we believed that it was a better business decision to proceed with the coal mine at that time and to use the water at the end of the mine life to have a pump hydro system. We've run into significant delays in restarting the coal mine and difficulty with the regulatory process here in Alberta, unfortunately. And so earlier this year, we dusted off the 2019 study and we gave it to some expert companies here in Alberta to relook at it and say, what do you think? Does this have potential if we were to bring it forward 15 years effectively and use... Wow. The existing infrastructure. So they looked at that and they said, yeah, it definitely has potential. And in fact, the Alberta electricity system needs this type of really what it is a big battery. So Alberta has decided to phase out its entire coal-fired power station fleet.
Wow.
Which will be gone by the end of this decade and potentially even earlier. They're seeking to replace that with renewables and gas-fired power. However, with the prospects of significant carbon tax federally, the gas-fired power stations themselves have decided not to proceed. So the largest gas-fired power station that was proposed got cancelled late last year. And just in September, TransAlta, the biggest, I think, electricity provider here, has decided to close three of its gas plants. So you're looking at an electricity system that's starting to potentially have big fragility. Very significant swings in power capacity as the sun shines and the wind blows or it doesn't. So the inherent intermittency in renewable energy is what powers our business case, whereby we get to, when there's excess wind and excess sun, we get to store that energy in our big battery. And when there is no sun, you know, in the nighttime or on a cloudy day and the solar panels aren't at their full capacity and the wind isn't blowing, there is going to be a requirement for us to provide electricity into the grid. So we're essentially storing green energy in a battery and producing that at call. So when we need it, we can produce it. So that was the original plan, and it has very attractive economics. And then a second group came and approached us in June and said, well, actually, you know, you have a unique situation where you have within 10 kilometres of your front gate, you have the largest power line, the largest railway, the largest highway and the largest pipeline all running in the corridor directly through a block of land that you have access to right in front of this property. So why wouldn't you put a hydrogen electrolyzer there? And as the market grows, you can grow that.
Sorry to interrupt you, Peter. What is a hydrogen electrolyzer? Is this the green hydrogen you were talking about before? Because forgive me, correct. I'm not really aware of what that means and what it is.
Okay, and an electrolyzer is effectively a factory with a very big electrical instrument going into water. So all it is electricity added to water to split the atoms into the molecules into hydrogen and oxygen from water.
Right.
And that is done now. It is not a brand new technology at all, but it is expensive right now. And the more common form of hydrogen is to make it from gas.
Okay.
So the prospect is that the market evolves for green hydrogen. So for us, the pump hydro energy storage project stands alone. If you add wind to it, if you add wind power to it, it becomes 100% renewable and a much, much more valuable project. If you then add this electrolyzer at the end of it, you then can be producing a very rare product, and because of its rarity value, people will pay premiums for that green hydrogen. How that market evolves, you know, really it's an option for us because the pump hydro is the centerpiece, and that's the piece that Montem owns. It's unique. It's very unusual to own land in the Rockies. In Alberta, it's even more unusual to have a very large body of water on that land,
yeah,
sitting 300 metres above the valley floor. That is the unique attribute we have, as well as the additional advantage of being right on those big, big, serious infrastructure linkages, which give you access to the market.
Peter, I just need to because Montem Resources started its life basically as we will be a hard coking coal mine with the tent mine. And are you saying that you've completely turned the strategy and the focus will be on the Tent Mountain renewable energy complex and we're not going to do coal because it's too hard and the government's making it too hard?
Okay, so no, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that we have looked at repurposing these assets and we're going to test that. We're going to test all the way through feasibility study over the next 12 months, whether or not, excuse me, I was in the call, whether or not that stacks up. You know, at the moment we're in pre-feasibility stage. We've done a lot of testing, but we have not taken this all the way through to feasibility study. We need to do that work before we can make a financing decision. Which one are we going to invest in? We're in this kind of fortuitous and unique position where we can take the one asset and turn it into two different things. Obviously, we're facing unforeseen difficulties on the Tent Mountain coal mine development restart. You know, it is taking a lot longer than we had hoped or had even thought. You know, we bought an existing coal mine.
That's what I'm saying. I want listeners to understand that this is an existing coal mine. Everything's there. Like, it's permitted, isn't it?
It holds a permit that allows it to exist, and it's registered with the government, and we have an environmental bond over the site with the government. It does not have an operating license, and we've been going through all the various requirements of both the provincial and now the federal government to attain that operating license, and we're continuing with that. From here, we got designated for federal review in June this year, and we are going through that process. It's quite a detailed and lengthy process, and you know, we continue to work on that. However, a separate team has done this work, and we really need to push it through, if you think about it, to a feasibility study to make a formal decision as a company on which one we're doing.
Yeah.
However, if you also think about it, as we spend more money on it and find out more about it.
How are you going to fund all of that feasibility studies and everything that you need to do? Where are you, you know, from investor point of view, where are you going to get that funding?
Sure. So we have a significant amount of money left. We did a capital raise in March this year. We have a significant amount of that left. We've also applied for a $5 million grant for the federal government, and they will award those grants in quarter one next year. We think that there is other grants that we qualify for, and we've actually got two different groups out there organising and analysing and working out how it is best to position ourselves to win those grants. You know, the federal government here in Canada, you wouldn't know, but the federal government here in Canada is aggressively chasing green hydrogen.
Oh, yeah.
The provincial government is also chasing hydrogen. They haven't worked out exactly where they're which basket they're going with. There's abundant fossil fuels in Alberta, really a very big gas province, very big oil province. But we think that we would qualify for a number of different grants, and that will help. And look, we'll be very careful the way we spend our money, as we have been all the way along in the development of Montrem Resources. We will step through a logical process of analysing the technical and environmental and social and ultimately economic merit of this project. I just like to sort of say right now, we're super excited about it. It looks really fantastic. The returns are great.
What are we looking at? When you say the returns are great, you know, that's music to my ears as an investor. What do you mean by that?
Well, I'm sort of a bit hesitant to put them out there just at the moment, Kerry, on the basis,
ladies and gentlemen.
on the basis that they're not at full feasibility level. But let me just say that this project would require a significant level of investment and would return a significant amount over the top of that investment over an extremely long period. These infrastructure assets, you know, think about Snowy Mountains and how long it's been going, right?
Yeah.
You know, the modelers that did our work studied it on a 50-year basis. And there's every reason to believe that this would last, you know, well in excess of 50 years.
Peter, it's such a tough to, but when you first got your hands on the Tent Mountain mine, which is a hard coking coal mine, and, you know, there's two assets there, did you realise that in your hands as well you might be able to turn this into the renewable energy complex? Because I think when you listed, this wasn't part of the package at that stage, was it?
Well, no, it was within the feasibility study, the pre-feasibility study, but not in so much as we hadn't formalised it the way we had now, and it was at the end of the mine life.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was at a concept stage at that point.
Right.
I'm going to credit the original founder of the company, Rob Tindall, still a director on the board. Rob has some significant experience with pump hydro around the place. You know, lots of Aussies surprisingly do, right? And he had bought the property in 2016. He had toured the property, and he was the one who said, hey, we should look at this as a pump hydro. He had some small involvement in or exposure to the other significant pump hydro project in Alberta. There's two. There's ours and another one. And yep. It is also at an old coal mine. And he toured that site. It's in pre-development now. And, you know, he just took that idea and said, let's look at this. And we did. So, yeah, cheers, Rob. Thank you very much.
What are the challenges that you're facing right now, apart from the obvious one, which is government on the coal side of things? So it's almost like the left hand, the government doesn't want us to do anything, but on the right hand, the government's all over us and throwing money at us. It's almost, it kind of, it's making me laugh a little bit, but because it's, they're almost intertwined, but they're separate.
Yeah, look, for others, no doubt it's a conundrum, right? Who are we? What's our identity? You look at it another way, we're the perfect hedge. We're giving you amazing exposure to the hottest commodity this year in hard coking coal, and we potentially giving you exposure to an electricity business that can feed a green hydrogen for the next 100 years. It's an amazing hedge. You get a short-term gain if we switch on the coal mines, and you get a long-term gain if we switch on the hydrogen. And either or, this company is progressing an amazing set of assets along a pathway to development to produce, you know, pretty spectacular cash flows. So, you know, I think that it may be difficult for government in some respects, but look, they've got their regulatory guidelines and specifications. They stay in their lanes. They're going to assess the coal project. They're going to assess the renewable energy complex. And it'll come down to Montem Resources and Montem Resources shareholders as to which one we finally invest in.
Okay, So at the moment, you've got these two separate things, but it'll come down to what's the best one to give best return to our shareholders.
We have a suite of other assets. The premier asset there is the Chinook project, and it is in category four lands, which is the only category in the 1976 coal policy of Alberta, which is under review, that allowed open cut coal mining. There are very, very few assets in that class. We own two of them, at Tent Mountain and at the Chinook project. We also have a range of other assets, and we also have a burning ambition to be a producer into this market right now. Mark Lochtenberg, our chairman, co-managing director of Glencore, enormous capacity to instigate M&A and investment. We have been extremely busy looking at additional assets in other jurisdictions.
Is that other coal assets or other assets in different areas?
Operating hard coking coal assets.
Hard coking coal. Now, just for everyone's interest, if they don't know, the hard coking coal price is, and I think you mentioned it earlier, it could become a critical mineral. Why are you so confident about the need for coal going forward when everybody seems to be talking about it's all about wind and solar? Why do you think that coal needs to be a critical mineral?
Yeah, it's a great question. Look, we in the coal industry, and there are you know, wonderful people in Queensland and the Illawarra producing it, and some of the best hard coking coal in the world, and right now they're getting $400 a tonne for it, which is probably around about $300 more per tonne than their operating costs. Incredible profit right now. And higher demand than they've ever seen. In the US, they're getting somewhere around $500 and even up to $600 a tonne for that same coal. And on the west coast of Canada, just next to us here in Vancouver, they are receiving similar premiums for their coal. So right now, as we come out of COVID and the world is consuming again, we are seeing the absolute, the need for coking coal to underpin the societies we know. Everything you use, whether it's your knife and fork, cut your steak, the car or train or boat or bus that you go to, or bicycle that you go to work on, or the wind turbines that are going to power our pump hydro system, all have a requirement for steel. And there is no way on a commercial basis to make new steel without a blast furnace and basic oxygen furnace, which requires around about 700 kilograms of coal per ton of steel. And that isn't changing anytime soon.
Give me those numbers again. So 700 kilos of coal.
To produce a ton of steel.
One ton of steel. Okay. And
about 73% of the world's steel that's produced each year is produced that way. And the other 30% of steel that is produced another way is recycled steel. It's not new steel.
Okay, so we need that base of the coking coal, and people have got to understand that you can't just switch off all the coal around the world. We're going to have massive issues if we do.
Yeah, undoubtedly, particularly for steelmaking.
Do you think that, because I'm quite interested in your in not only the renewable energy complex, but I'm interested in those hard coking coal assets. How confident are you that the government will come back? Because you own the assets. There is an operating permit, not an operating permit, there's a permit for the mine. How confident are you with shareholders to say to them, look, we will get there in the end?
Oh, look, we are very, very confident, Kerry. We remain steadfast in our belief that we've set up a great business here in Canada, in Alberta, and unfortunately we've been waylaid by, by political twists and turns. We would have been much better off had the government not changed their coal policy in June 2 years ago or June 1 year ago, year and a half ago, and just left it as it was. Our assets, as you said, we own the land at Tent Mountain. We own the majority of the coal at Tent Mountain that's under permit and under our mine plan. And similarly at Chinook, we don't own the surface land at Chinook, but we do own the majority of the coal that is under our mine permit. So there's really two, let me sort of classify that. The coal was effectively sold by Alberta and the forebears of Alberta in the early 1900s to coal mining companies that were associated with railways that pushed through here and started these coal fields. And very soon thereafter, they realised the coal was far too good to be using as fuel in steam engines, and they started producing coke with it. But that coal was sold over 100 years ago, and we own it. And we think that there is a very strong case that, that we should be able to, as long as we meet the regulatory, the rules and the laws and the regulations and the guidelines that we made the investment under, be allowed to go forth and produce those coal mines.
Well, you'll just have to jump through a million regulatory hoops. But my last question, because we're running out of time, before we finish up, this is around the local people. Are the local people supportive of Tent Mountain and what you're doing there? What's the local population like?
Yeah, so first off, for all the coal producers in the Process Pass region, and there are half a dozen of us roughly, the local community continue to be overwhelmingly in support of the development of these.
Okay, good.
It's not the local community that has an overwhelming, disdain or dislike or do not want them. Of course, there are pockets of the local community that don't want coal mining, but overwhelmingly there is a positive response. So that's the first thing. The second thing is we haven't actually had a town hall down in the Process Pass about the renewable energy complex. Very excitingly, we have the Piikani Nation, whose traditional territories we operate on, who have agreed with us to investigate mutual benefit from these projects. And you know, there's two aspects of that that are really important to us. One is it is their traditional territories that we operate on, and we want them involved in our projects. Secondly, where their reserves are and their reserve lands are in sort of the epicenter of wind power generation in southern Alberta. It is the perfect place for additional wind generation, and we would hope that we can reach some great commercial terms that are, as we say, mutually beneficial and push forward this renewable energy complex in unison with the Piikani Nation people. The Crozes Pass, I told you before we started that I was on a previous interview, was with the Crozes Pass paper. They are super excited. I did brief the mayor and another councillor earlier on, and they are overwhelmed with interest and excitement for something new to come in. They're very frustrated about, you know, the way that the coal is stalled out, right?
Yeah.
You know, Gina Reinhart and Hancock Resources came here and have invested at least $750 million, because that's what they bought the project for, and they've been working pretty hard ever since. For them to be denied their permits was a shock to us, a shock to the industry. I expect a shock to them. I know they've been working very, very hard on their appeal process of that. But the Crozes Pass community are the ones who are really losing out, right? Yeah. Obviously, Gina Reinhart and Hancock Prospecting are too, but it's the jobs and the bringing back to life this old mining town that really has seen better days. So the council are super excited. I'll get down there and present to them shortly and show them exactly our plans. And, yeah, we expect pretty strong local support.
Well, it's been a fascinating chat with you, Peter. We are running out of time, and I know you've got to get going as well. My sign-off is always this, Peter. It's an investor audience. I'd love you just to encapsulate in three bullet points why you think investors should be sitting up and really taking notice of Montem Resources and what you're doing.
Only three?
Yeah, only three.
Okay.
People have said that. Can I have six? I'm like, nope, three.
No, three's good. All right. So green hydrogen.
Okay.
It is a serious contender to change the world, and we're exposed to it. Number two would be diversification of our existing asset base. We're managing to diversify risk and exposure. And number three is the exposure to the hottest commodity on earth this year. I mean, hard coking coal is extraordinary. And, you know, you used the words critical mineral before. I think over time people will be willing to accept that hard coking coal into blast furnaces is an absolute essential ingredient to the world's future.
Peter Doyle, Managing Director and CEO of Montem Resources. I want to get you back on in the new year and see what's happening in Montem. Enjoy Alberta, Canada, and you're slightly more free up there, but thanks for sharing this story with us. Fascinating, and I wish you all the luck.
Thanks very much, Terry. Look forward to talking again.